It's very exciting for us to think about adding to a bullpen that over the last stretch has been very effective for us.
My name is J.D. Bunkus. Your name is Ailish Forfar. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you feeling today?
I like how you say it, short. I'm a big respect person. You know, I believe in respect culture. It's like you should respect other people's times. You should be mindful of other people.
All right, Aretha Franklin. Let's go.
Yeah. You don't think so?
I don't think so.
For me, if I go out on a date.
Oh, boy.
My ick is rudeness.
Yeah, I could agree.
Like, not being on time. You know, being a couple minutes. I'm not crazy, you know, but.
You got your stopwatch.
Yeah, so that's. I'm not nuts.
43 seconds miss.
But if you're over 15, 20 minutes late for the date, it's probably done. You know, like it's just not it. If you don't say thank you to people, you know, if you don't at least do the fake reach for the card, and you don't thank for the meal, you know, the drinks. Mm-hmm. Wow, tough.
Even if it's an empty reach.
Yeah, just and do they're all.
Arm out.
They're almost all empty reaches, ladies. We know. All right? We know they're all empty reaches. Yesterday was not respectful of the time of Toronto Blue Jays fans. I didn't feel the respect yesterday. I didn't feel the respect for the players. I didn't feel the respect for the fans. I didn't feel respect for the people who cover the team. That stunk. I don't know about you, but I spent my entire day basically refreshing my phone going, they're going to do something big. Like, didn't you get that feel that it was quiet? It was like a Raptors thing, mm-hmm. You know, where it was, these guys are keeping it close to the vest. They're learning from Masai. They're going to do. And instead, it felt more like a Leafs thing.
Ooh.
Yeah. Well, I said this to Ben, you know, and we're going to have Ennis on at 7 today because I'm going to try to be a little bit more rational than I was in the moment, even though I love being a sports fan. I'll never apologize to people for that. Honestly, if you don't like it, you can straight up suck an egg, because I could not be less concerned with the likes of people who write today are going, the Jays did great. They shouldn't have overpaid for the prices. They should. Boy, oh boy, why are you so mad? How could it be L for the Jays? They upgraded the bullpen and they got a guy who was an all-star last year. That's pretty great. Pretty great to me. Why are you mad? That stunk. John Heyman had a report in the middle of the day. Said, Jays players aren't very happy with what's going on right now. It's a growing sense of frustration. I saw Rob Longley tweet, Jays, a lot of Blue Jays huddled around a television today. Do you think that trade deadline, that those guys, they went, wow, that's awesome. That this was a great day. This was just the day we all imagined it would be. No. And I can actually tell you with certainty that it is not. If you look at Ross Stripling, for example, a guy who I think has shouldered more responsibility for this baseball team than anybody had expected, before the deadline, you want to hear what he had to say?
I would like to hear.
Uh-huh. He talked about there's a lot of pieces out there that can make the team better. So we're all anxious to see who's going to walk in on August 3rd because the front office has pretty much proven that they're going to get someone. Between deadlines and free agencies, they continue to make moves, which gives us confidence and makes us feel good that they believe in us and continue to make us better. Then he said, you can always use More swing and miss, there's no doubt. We have like five guys with sub-3 ERAs in our bullpen, so we have a really good bullpen. That's his way of making sure that everybody knows that he's not trying to advocate against getting rid of people. And then he continues. It's like, let's just get better, right? If we can get better, if there's a piece out there that makes us better, why wouldn't we go after it? End quote. Okay, so what did I say? What did all of us basically say the three objectives of the trade deadline were?
They were to possibly a starter and possibly lefty bat.
But what kind of a reliever?
A good
swing,
one.
Swing and miss. I actually think that on its own, when the Jays made the Anthony Bass trade, I said that this is a good trade. If you look at it, Anthony Bass, since he left the Toronto Blue Jays organization, he has become a different pitcher, and he was pretty good here. Like I liked the Anthony Bass experience. I never had a problem with it. But if you look at kind of his numbers right now, he doesn't get as many ground balls as he used to. His strikeout rate is higher than it's ever been. It's up to 26%, which is not awful. It's not terrible, but it's not what we're talking about here. That's not a high velocity punch out arm that's throwing, you know, 98, 97 plus of the bullpen.
He's got a 95.
You're right. He's been great. He's been great. His WAR is, you know, 1.4. He's got an ERA that's sub-2. He's been phenomenal this year. The pitch mix has been the thing that has really worked out for this guy. Like, he has really, really evolved as a pitcher. I'm a big Anthony Bass fan. I think that it is great. Using his sinker more for strikes. He's been great.
And
he's
got the fit in the locker room, intangibles.
Yeah. Same thing with
that.
The pop with the kid pop. It's a bit of a flyer pick. Like when they first announced that it was pop for Groshans, I went, boy, his value really has traded. But basically, he's using one pitch a ton of the time, and it's his sinker, and it's apparently a pretty effective pitch. He's not really walking guys, but he only strikes out batters at a rate of 17%. This is not a strikeout arm either, so maybe they can turn him into something. They've got 4 years of control, but I don't really care about control in a year where it's supposed to be the movie and all of your rivals got better. I think it's a really cowardly approach, and I saw a lot of this on Twitter. The other teams got so much better. The Jays knew that they weren't going to mortgage the future. They weren't going to sacrifice the farm. Who comes up with these ideas? Who says these things? Like, first of all, the idea that your competition got better and so you should not, like, whoever says that, whoever looks at life that way, I'm sorry, your life must kind of stink just a little bit. You must be just like at least a half a loser, right? Like, so someone's getting better than you, and instead of you saying, yo, I should work harder, I need to do more, you look at it and go, well, that person's just better than me.
Well, there should be some competitive feelings when you're watching people, especially because some of this action happened on Friday. So you had Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday to find a way to match or get close to matching what your division rivals are doing. And it came down to 5:55, and you were picking up the crumbs.
So you had three objectives in my eyes. You had to get swing and miss stuff out of the bullpen. You needed to get a solid starting pitcher with some pedigree in order to give you some room between you and Max Castillo, and you and the potential implosion of Yusei Kikuchi and an injury. And it would have been nice to have Ross Stripling not have to go potentially into deep territory that he has just like not been in before. It's been pointed out about where he's been at with his innings. I think his career innings limit has been 120, and he is over, I believe, 82 as of right now. They go out and get a guy named Mitch White, who has 14 career starts. And that might turn out to be a decent trade. But as of right now, in terms of what this team needs, it's a pretty bold move. It's a pretty bold move to say that's the buffer now for us when it comes to starting pitchers. When we have Yusei Kikuchi, Ross Stripling, and really nothing in the minor leagues, because again, they actually moved out Max Castillo in the trade for Whit Merrifield, who people look at and go, well, that's a ball player. That's a nice addition. He's got speed. He's got bat to ball skills. Well, he's got a 640 OPS. And if you talk about things that this team already is, it's, well, they're too right-handed and they don't have enough on base. And you bring in a guy who's right-handed, who doesn't get on base, who has a negative WAR this season. And I actually kind of like Whit Merrifield. I think he's like legitimately like a ball player. I think he's a bit of a gamer. I've always liked him whenever the Jays have faced him. I think he's a guy that will come up and give him a little something different in the lineup, as some may say.
Well, the sell factor is that he can play anywhere. And
yeah.
Hint, hint, if Springer is maybe not going to be a reliable source right now, there's your cushion.
Well, I wouldn't say he can play anywhere, because like he can't play in Canada. So that's one thing.
That was shocking.
Because even if he gets...
That wasn't really a Atkins... He didn't really confirm that that is something that's going to change.
I think it's a lock. It will change. It was interesting to see Atkins' approach yesterday. If you didn't hear it, Ross Atkins addressing the fact that Whit Merrifield is not vaccinated, he said that he's going to give some time to him and his family. And to me, that's a... They checked in on it.
Mm-hmm. And he said,
he's discussed
maybe,
it.
Yeah, sure.
No, he's discussed it, and he said, yeah, I'm just going to need a little time with this. But I highly doubt the Jays would make that trade if he was never going to get the vaccine.
He doesn't seem like something that would align with their way of approaching the season, but it takes minimum 2 weeks.
Yeah, but that's exactly right, is that they are still chasing this number one wildcard seed. It is monumentally important. The Seattle Mariners are going to have Luis Castillo on the mound tonight against Gerrit Cole. When they face the Yankees, they're going to put out a bona fide ace that they went out and got. They're not going away. They've got some injuries, like they're beat up. But if you look at the Jays right now, 2 weeks without Merrifield means 2 more weeks of trying to figure out different ways to potentially platoon for George Springer. That's what that one indicated to me, was that Whit Merrifield is here because they are a little bit concerned about what is going on with George Springer. So, yeah, they didn't get a little bit more left-handed. That didn't go down. They didn't get swing and miss of their bullpen, and they didn't get a reliable starter. I don't know how you could evaluate this deadline as an exciting one. If you're, clutching at prospect pearls, fine. I think that what happened here is the Jays tried a ton, that they were uber aggressive, that they went out and they looked at every available option. And that once they missed out on the Montas and Trevino thing, which, by the way, I saw a lot of people freaking out that all these prospects went in all these deals, right? I didn't think that this deadline was overly rich. I thought that there were some trades that you went and you batted an eye and you said, woof, that's a steep price. Like the Mariners acquisition of Castillo, that was a really, really steep price. But if you look at the Yankees, and a lot of these other organizations, I'm talking about the Juan Soto trade aside, some of these were not unpalatable to me. These were not, you know, the top prospects in your farm. This was not Aurelvis Martinez, potentially. This was depth from good organizations that have built up decent depth in their minor leagues for this exact purpose. This is why you have a minor league system. And again, we've done this over and over and over, but show me all the trades that have come back to haunt the Blue Jays where they have given up prospects, okay? Like, show me, to those of you that are the Ross Atkinses and the Shapiros of the world that have chastised everyone who is critical of this deadline, who exactly has come back to bite this organization. I got to go through this, try to do this methodically. The next point I want to make is people keep saying, well, who would you have gotten? Who was the guy that moved that you would have done if you were the GM? First of all, that has been done by us for weeks. That has been done by most of everybody that covers this team for weeks. If you look at some of the names that got traded and you just walk through it, Jose Lopez got traded for 4 prospects. And oh boy, does that ever look like a lot. They're middle tier prospects. Josh Hader got moved. He's had a bad couple of weeks. Not really sure if it's going to be a... not really sure if he's ever going to be the same guy, frankly. That's a risky move. They gave up a couple of middling prospects. And a couple of guys who they might try to reconstruct to the major league level. Atlanta got Raisel Iglesias, who Blake was stumping for yesterday. You know what they got him for? Cash. Michael Givens was moved in a trade. He was traded for a pitching prospect. Like, moves got made yesterday. A lot of teams got made moves. And frankly, like, if you go through, just find me a winners and losers column that has the Blue Jays in a winners column anywhere. No, they're not. No. Because they were losers yesterday. They were unequivocally losers. They were too afraid to either pay the price of getting business done, or they didn't build up a good enough farm system in which other teams were attracted to their pieces and were willing to do moves with them. And I think that it was a little bit more of that. I think that the Jays, a front office that has really prided themselves on making sure that there is waves of development, making sure that there are multiple layers to the prospect system, to the farm system, that there has been a bit of a failing in making sure that there is depth in their farm system right now.
Well, everything they have identified was middle-tier prospect, middle-tier prospect. There is no middle-tier prospect. It's top prospect in baseball, a top 10, and then people that we literally don't know anything about.
Yep. I'm unbelievably disappointed in the Blue Jays. And listen, I never thought that they should go out and go absolutely bananas at the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. I didn't want them to be in on Luis Castillo because I didn't think that that was worth the price of trading, you know, top three prospects, you know, two of your top three guys in order to acquire Luis Castillo. I said, oof, that's probably tough asset management when you already have three starters you've invested heavily in, you know? And I guess even more if you're counting Ryu and Kikuchi, but I'm talking about your top three guys. You're already kind of set there. I didn't want them to be in on Frankie Montas, although I would have taken that infinity times out of infinity over the deadline that they ended up having to get he and Trevino. I really did think that they were going to be two bullpen arms, one swing and miss, absolutely, and then a starting pitcher of some consequence. I can't believe it because I was never even really high on Noah Syndergaard, and when they missed out on Syndergaard, I went, holy crap.
You were disappointed a little bit.
Well, who are they going to get now? I thought that field of starting pitching, like that depth pitching, that was going to kind of be there. I'm a little intrigued by their interest in White. Again, this is an organization that traded for Ross Stripling, and there's a little buzz that this guy is the successor to him, but when the Braves went out and they did the Iglesias trade, I thought, there you go. Like, there's a guy who just cost you money and who provides you swing and miss and who provides you back into the bullpen, and you didn't want to do it. You didn't want to pull the trigger on it. There were multiple moves that were a lot of prospects, a bunch of different guys. Either you didn't want to do it or you didn't have the guys. Either way, it did not work out. Like, you did not come out of this team, this deadline, closer to a World Series than when you entered it. And that is the goal of this time, and that is why it's a failure for them. And you just have to look at the betting odds for this. The Blue Jays' betting odds dropped.
I wonder how much of that also has to do with other teams going
But it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's irrelevant.
No, I understand.
It's just like, yeah, it is about other teams going up. It is about other teams getting better and being more aggressive. But again, that's the point. You're supposed to be there with those teams. This is supposed to be a World Series team right now. And I know people don't feel that because they keep looking at the Yankees' record. The Yankees just had a July where they were under 500. They made these moves to try to make sure that they shook up their room and that they had the things that they needed. You know what the Yankees are the worst at this year? Defensive runs saved in center field. They're awful at it. That's been one of their biggest Achilles heels of the season. You know what they did? They traded Jordan Montgomery. And they went, boy, Jordan Montgomery, that's a steep price to pay. Do you know why? Because they went out and got a center fielder who can really play defense, who can really snag it, and who can play out there and shore up that issue. That's what top-tier teams do come deadline time. They identify the issue that they have, and they pay a price to go out and get it because you didn't pay the price during the offseason. And so now you've got people looking at this thing going, well, the Yankees are too far apart and the Astros are too far apart. I don't think those teams are worlds apart. This isn't the NBA. This isn't easy to prognosticate. If you look at the history of the World Series winners, like, is it always the best team? No, it's always really good teams because they get into the playoffs. But how many years have we seen it where a team looks like an unstoppable juggernaut and they don't end up winning the World Series? The Jays have an offense that can hang with just about anybody. They have starting pitchers that can hang with just about anybody. They needed swing and miss out of the bullpen. They needed playoff arms that could show up in there and strike people out when the game is on the line. When it's the bottom of the seventh inning and you can't go to Romano yet, and there's two runners on because you've left in your starter because you're trying to get length out of Gausman because he's a guy who showed you last night that he can go deep in a ball game. Who are you going to call on? You need somebody to get you an out. There's a runner on third. There's only one out. You do not want to give up that one run. Who are you going to call on? Who do you feel is going to give you that punch out in that big spot? They don't have that arm still. They do not have that extra playoff arm. Unbelievably disappointing.
Okay.
A bunch of those arms moved.
I want to ask you a question that I didn't see any like comments on. Do you think that maybe teams were asking more from the Blue Jays because we talked about this about a month ago, smaller amount of pool that they could work from? Do you think that that was any type of indicator to why they weren't able to land any of these?
No, I don't think so. If we're talking about the vaccination status thing.
Yeah.
One, they traded for a guy who isn't vaccinated.
Right.
Two is that we've seen this now with a couple of different players who were unvaccinated, is that they were willing to reconsider their status moving into the postseason. Mm-hmm. A lot of these guys are just ball players and they want to win World Series, and some of them were obviously reconsidering it. The player pool, I think that maybe there was a few guys that were off the table for them when it came to starters, right? Like Molly, for example, the Reds pitcher who ended up getting traded to the Twins. But outside of that, it was pretty limited in terms of the names, and there was never anybody that I think that the Jays were probably overly in love with. There was enough depth here, right? Like, enough names got moved yesterday. Go down and look at the trades that happened over the last 2 days. Milwaukee getting Matt Busch. Teams made moves. Efros going to the Yankees. Like, teams made moves to address their bullpen. The Jays did too. Again, I like the trade that they made for Bass, especially considering Groshans. You know, you look at him, he's a guy that might be a poster child for getting screwed over by the pandemic when it comes to development. He was looking great, and then he misses a season, and then his career just never was really the same ever again. He's got, I believe, the second lowest slugging percentage of any qualified player at his level
right now.
Yeah,
he had like one home run, too.
Yeah, he has not hit for power. He has had a tough go. A lot of people still like him, but he's one of those guys that is a middle infielder that they think has to move to third in order to play at the major league level. And even when he goes to the Marlins, there's a deep concentration of players that play the same position as him or are going to be combined with him for those spots. Jordan Groshans is not a lock to make the major leagues. I think he's going to get a shot at some point. He's got a lot that you like about him. For the pedigree is there, and the approach is there. The discipline is there. Not sure that he's a guy that Blue Jays fans loved. Jordan Groshans had clearly fallen out of favor within the organization. Moving him, when people projected him as a top 100 prospect, or they were calling him that in the trades, I went, these are old lists, guys. You got to move off this. This is no longer a top 100 prospect. Getting Bass, who has a year of control, who, again, has changed his pitch arsenal, who has done much, much better this season, and honestly, Zach Pop, the Canadian kid, who has some really nice stuff, you know, has a couple of really nice pitches, but is, again, a two-pitch guy that projects as reliever, 4 years of control. It's a nice piece of business. It really is. I think that pretty much everything else came up far short, though, of a team that's trying to act like a World Series contender yesterday.
Mm. We're going to open up the text line as well today. Not text line Tuesday, maybe like weigh-in Wednesday. What do you think of that?
I kind of like that.
Weigh-in Wednesday. Wednesday. Sure. Already a lot coming in, obviously, because lots to talk about this morning.
Sure.
We can do that as well throughout the show, but I'll just give you one here. Justin from Toronto. Good morning, guys. Being a Jays fan, I did feel like I was disrespected by the front office, but it could have been worse. Imagine if they did less or even nothing. By the way, did you see Devin Williams' interview yesterday about the Hader trade? Now that's disgruntled.
I didn't see it.
We're going to look that up during the break.
I didn't see it. I would imagine that they'd be pretty pissed because basically for the last 5 years, Josh Hader's been arguably the best relief pitcher in baseball. The only thing with Hader is that he's had a couple weeks now where his ERA is over 8. And I would have loved to have taken a shot on a guy like Hader because, again, if it works out for you, it can be It can change your prospects of winning World Series. But anyway, that would be a win for me for an organization like the Padres, who, by the way, were the biggest winners of the day. This is also the funniest thing to me, is that, you know, people are so upset. Or not so upset, but people are so obsessed with prospects. They went, well, how could the Jays have done that? I am curious to talk to Blair today, because we have Jeff Blair at 8 o'clock, about what he thinks the Jays tried to do. A friend told me that the Jays did check in with the idea of Bo Bichette, but that he's even too old for what Washington wants to do, that they're going full scorched earth here. They're going just down. They got a bunch of prospects, and I saw a lot of this that day. I saw a lot of, hey, they paid the richest price of any team in deadline history. And writers ran with that, and different baseball people really ran with that. They went, see, the Jays would have had, you know how many people I saw put, the Jays would have had to include Manoah. I went, are you guys what? Out of your minds?
You
fell
this?
For this again? Yeah, you actually believe that Manoah would have had to have been in a trade for Juan Soto. Like, you really believe this? Like, this is still a concrete belief in your mind? Absolutely not. Again, I think that they probably coveted those prospects more than the ones that the Jays had, especially when it comes to the depth. But I saw an article that was as follows. The Padres traded guys who are either struggling at the major league level, which is not a write-off for their career, but it's not a guarantee. There's no guaranteed piece in this thing. They're either struggling at the major league level, they're either hurt, or they're in low A-ball. A-ball or lower. That's what they traded for Juan Soto. Whew. Tough. That's a huge win. Huge win for the Padres, who went out, did big boy business, went out and got a player that, I don't know, I'll never for the life of me understand why every single team in baseball didn't look at that thing and say, yeah, that's trying to win, whatever, we'll give up as many prospects as possible. Three bites at the apple with that player, with one of the best players that's ever been available given his age and track record at a trade deadline. Why not every single team in baseball was going nuts for him and wasn't willing to offer exactly what the Padres did? Anyways, it was a wild trade deadline. It's way in Wednesday, so let me know what you think. But I give the Jays a C-.
I was going to go with
It's not
C.
an F. It's not a... They win one trade, in my opinion. They made the bullpen better, which is good. They're still missing swing and miss arms. They didn't get a starting pitcher that I am going to be all that interested in seeing. I am curious about what Mitch Williams gives them. I think it's a long man. Again, the bullpen got better, so I'm going, good. They didn't change the versatility of their lineup, and I'm still terrified of what's going to happen if a starter gets hurt. Which was always going to be the case, but I would have really liked, you know, another adult in the room. I wanted one player that I think this organization should be, like, overly excited for, and I don't think that they got that. I don't think that they gave their players a shot in the arm, and I'm especially concerned
literally
about the George Springer thing. I'm really concerned about the George Springer thing. Seeing Lourdes Gurriel Jr. lead off yesterday, and them starting to get a little bit more experimental with this, it was a reminder that I'm not sure what they did. But yeah, the Twins were more aggressive than you. The Yankees were more aggressive than you. The Mariners were more aggressive than you. The Astros were more aggressive than you. Just about every team that surrounds you and that is slightly behind you decided that they were going to try to get a lot better, and the Blue Jays just kind of nibbled away. And that's fine, but again, just ask yourself how many years you think the Jays are in this competitive timeline. Because yes, Vladdy and Bo are young. Everybody gets that. Manoah's young. George Springer's not. George Springer's already hurt, and his career's already seemingly a bit in decline. They have one more year of Teoscar Hernandez. They have one more year. Like, Teoscar is then going to be a free agent. How many years of this do you think that you're going to end up having with some of these guys? Yeah, of course they're going to be able to readjust and reinvent themselves and do all kinds of different things. But what do you think this is? Because to me, again, it feels a little bit like the Toronto Maple Leafs. They've got 2 years left of control with Lourdes Gurriel Jr. before he gets expensive. He's going to be a little bit more expensive next year, but they've got two more years of that. This one and next. What do you think that runway is going to look like? this just feels a little bit like the Leafs to me from the standpoint of when they had their young players on those contracts, people went, they're the new Blackhawks. You know, people had seen Super Bowl winners like the Seahawks win with a rookie quarterback, Russell Wilson. And they said, these are the new efficiencies, is these rookie deals in important spots allowing you to spend in other places and go nuts in other places. And that's what the Blue Jays have. And there's still time. You know, Bobichet has 3 more years before he's getting big money. Same with Vladdy. But that felt a little bit like that today when I woke up this morning. Was those years where the Leafs had those guys on those contracts, and then all of a sudden those contracts were over. And we can say there's no salary cap in baseball, but we all know that there's a budget, and we know that this team has one.
And I was surprised because we've said that the budget felt not endless, but it felt like this year they were in spend mode, and they were given the green light to go get them. But
I don't think money was a major issue. Like, that wasn't seemingly what was going on here. I will say that the Iglesias one is a little bit annoying because it really was money. And he's well overpaid. And it would have been a risky move to bring him in, especially, again, given volatility of relievers and all these things and the fact that he's having a bit of a down year. And I think that he's 33 years old and he's still got 3 years left, and it's $16 million a year. Like, that's a lot to pay a relief pitcher into his, you know, mid-30s. Is a dangerous move. But the Braves went out and did it. a team that just won went out and did it. A GM known for his aggression at this time of year went out and did it. And I just think that's kind of what the biggest boy clubs do. And yesterday to me was just, it was a little reminder. And that sucked. Is that even when things are at their very best here, it's not quite. There's still that tier below the top end organizations in baseball. Yesterday was a reminder of that. I need a little bit of a pick me up before we do seven. I'm hoping Ennis has more perspective for me. I'm hoping Jeff Blair has a little bit more perspective for me. But yeah, it's weigh in Wednesday, as Ailish put it. So you can text 590-590. You can reach us on Twitter or on Instagram at any time at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar. I got a lot of good replies yesterday. A lot of people reaching out. I got some, you know, I don't mind if you disagree. If you disagree, that's fine. I think it's the way that sometimes people present this thing where, boy, it's a little wild. It's a little wild out in the Blue Jays streets right now.
Maybe they're trying to convince themselves.
I don't know. Well, you know what, though? Again, if you don't believe in this baseball team, or you don't think that this is the year or whatever, like, I don't know. I don't think you're paying attention, but I think that the Jays can still hang with anybody. Could they still win a World Series? Absolutely, they could still win a World Series. Did they get closer to it yesterday? No, they did not. And I don't think anybody around baseball really shares the opinion that they do. I have not seen one credible person.
Certainly does not inspire confidence as a fan. No. It does not as a player, which I worry about. I don't think they're going to mail it in any sense. But I think that, especially with those reports yesterday of them being excited. Even last week you heard people being interviewed saying, yeah, we're just waiting to see who we get. And there was all this excitement and giddiness around the trade deadline. And certainly there's a level of disappointment. So how does that affect the clubhouse? That's to be seen, but it definitely affects the fan base, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I think fans are down right now. I think that the vast majority of the fan base is down. I was looking at a lot of different polls, and I think it was like pretty much 80-20 disappointed to fine with it. And again, I think that the people who are fine with it today are just the prospect people, where like they care more about the Baseball America rankings than they do about the actual team, and that they view the Yankees being higher in the standings as some kind of a measure of the Jays having no shot. Jays need home field advantage in the wild card. That's just no doubt about it. They don't do that, it's not going to feel like playoffs, especially if they lose. If they face the Mariners, it's the difference between Robbie Ray or no Robbie Ray. It's the difference between playing at home where you're dominant versus on the road where you've been pretty mediocre this season.
At least the Seattle team is like a 20% home game at times.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't really work for them last time because they got swept. They got swept. The only good thing
is... That was a tough time in the season. Yeah, they've remedied some of those issues.
The only good thing about potentially starting on the road is the guy that went out on the road yesterday and dropped his ERA to 2 on the road this year, Kevin Gausman. His whip is 1, his ERA is 2. His opponent's average is 225. He's only walked 10 batters and struck out 69.
That
nice.
Was quite the showing. Did you think that he should have pitched the ninth? That was the big conversation on Twitter.
To be honest, no, not really. I didn't feel that way because this one was too close of a ball game.
And it was at 103 pitches, which the nerds is it's too much.
Well, I don't the 100 pitches thing, I think that we've become too dogmatic with it, to be honest. But I thought that it was the right time to get him out of that ballgame. And you have Jordan Romano. You're facing a division rival. You close that game down. You go to the All-Star. You go to your best relief pitcher. I had zero issue with it. When it was Alek Manoah and the early parts of the season and he's in the low or the high 80s of pitches, I would have run him out there and let him try to get a complete game, especially since he cared. I don't think Kevin Gausman thought about that for 1 second that he wanted that complete game. I think he's been there, done that. He's deeper in his career. What do we have for the A-list today?
Okay, we got some incredible F1 drama. Moments like what's happening are why Drive to Survive were created. Stay tuned. That's next on the A-list. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Yeah. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong,
bing bong,
bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, lots of A-List today. Starting with that F1 drama. Whew. So, a little bit of background: what's happened in the last couple days? Vettel announces that he's retiring. Won't be racing for Aston Martin in 2023. So congrats on a great career. Then Monday morning, Alonso says he's leaving Alpine to fill that open spot at Aston Martin, which is kind of surprising, but good for you. Go get that bag, King. Yesterday morning, Alpine and F1 official accounts, all of the official accounts that have anything to do with F1, announced that this young stud who's been like the hottest name in the paddock this year, Oscar Piastri, is going to race for Alpine. People are pumped. It's his big, you know, debut. He's finally got his opportunity to drive F1. Fantastic signing. He's been involved with the organization for quite a while. Then he comes out and says, no, I'm not. I understand that without my agreement, Alpine put out a press release that I'm driving for them next year. This is wrong. I will not be driving for them next year. Okay, so huge error, of course, by Alpine. Now we're hearing rumors that he's actually going to be moving or interested because of this in going elsewhere to McLaren. So they might have botched their opportunity to land this young stud by going public without actually confirming that he was going to race for them. It's a big blemish and possibly a humongous error for their future. This guy is like the top prospect, and now he hates your organization.
I don't understand it.
In which sense?
I don't understand how there could be such a major miscommunication of this degree without thinking that, you know, something happened. Because, again, I don't know how Alpine could make this mistake, offer this release, but not have a clear indication. To me, this feels more like the kid changed his mind, even though they had a verbal agreement. That they had a verbal agreement, and then once that happened, someone else stepped in, got involved, and
social media manager jumped the gun.
No, I don't think that's what happened. Again, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know anything about this beyond what I read at the surface level of the story. I'll be honest, like, I've been so deep into baseball today, this past week, and NFL news that's been starting to really come through that. And I watched actually F1 this past weekend, Ferrari once again just being just so embarrassing. I talked to our producer Daniele about it. Just I don't know why their team principal isn't, there's not more callings for his firing, because they've just made so many mistakes
terrible.
This year. They had the quickest car on the grid and they blew it. Like, they've had a blown season. This should at least be competitive down the stretch, and it's not going to be because of just error after error after error. I asked him if he could remember anything like it, and he couldn't. Daniele, our producer who's watched this his entire life. This to me just reeks of, they had a verbal agreement, team got overly excited, They weren't quite done yet. They jumped the gun a touch. And then once they started doing that, and once the wheels were in deep motion, no pun intended, that somebody else stepped in and said, we can improve this offer. We can offer you something better. And now they're searching for someone to pair with Esteban Ocon, and who knows who that's going to be. But yeah, it's definitely embarrassing for Alpine, and it's been a bit of an embarrassment for them for a couple of seasons. They've had some embarrassing different runs. But yeah, I'm kind of curious as to what they're going to end up doing here. But yeah, some people are even saying that could be, you know, it's Daniel Ricciardo. Little thing, you know, like, you know,
number one fan of the show
reunion.
And
little reunion
friend of the show.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, either way,
keep an eye out on all the drama to come. I'm sure that episode as well will be if there is one, but there's gonna be some good episodes this season with Ferrari. It's gonna be good.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this one. Although this again, it's just they missed Max the year before. I think they're gonna feel that even more this season because there isn't going to be that same tension between, you know, Toto and Christian that they've relied on so heavily. They've been able to kind of play those two guys off each other and then have the drivers be a little bit more secondary. This year, I think that you're really going to feel the lack of Max because the story is like that. He's the story of the F1 season now. It's not the rivalry. It's not the competition. It's him and it's Ferrari. And so, yeah, no Max is going to have a pretty sizable effect, I think, on the way that I feel about the series moving forward. Like, they're going to have to figure something out with him.
They should have come along with me to Montreal for the drama, to just film people exiting for multiple hours and hiking about 7 to 10 kilometers. That would have been great TV. Okay, so huge news yesterday in the NFL, which we got to break down. So
yeah,
the Dolphins, following that six-month investigation, were proven guilty to have violated the anti-tampering policy three occasions from 2019 and 2022 with those conversations with Brady and Sean Payton. So the result of this is that they lose their first round pick in 2023, a third round pick in 2024. Owner Stephen Ross suspended through October 17th and fined $1.5 million. Bruce Beal, their vice chairman, fined $500,000, can't attend meetings. Quite the significant ruling, quite severe as well, because of this tampering. So a lot to unpack there, but
so the $1.5 million is the max, it's the maximum allowable that they have agreed to. So I really don't think the $1.5 million is all that much, especially when you're talking about Stephen Ross. Yeah, exactly. An NFL owner. He's meeting these meetings with Tom Brady were on yachts. I don't think that the $1.5 million is over that big of a deal. I think the first round pick is the only thing that Stephen Ross cares about. And I think that his reputation is probably something that he is perturbed has taken this hit. Because the news that went kind of under the radar in this story is that the Dolphins were cleared on the Brian Flores accusations. They were kind of cleared in a hilarious way in the sense of, did you read it?
Nope. Oh, yeah. Okay. I think I saw the statement. When you read it, I'll remember. It's
basically, this is the abbreviated version. Yeah, one conversation sort of had saying we should, the owner, Stephen Ross, said we should focus more on our draft position than winning ball games. And Brian Flores got mad, and then he wrote essentially something he took to the net. Put some stuff down in writing, and then they never spoke of this again. And now, that despite them saying that, that's not enough proof to say that they were calling for tampering, or that, you know, if you remember, Brian Flores said that they was offered $100,000 a loss, and now that's been viewed as just joshing. Hey, it was just joshing. Hey, the owner who said openly we should care more about our draft position than us winning ball games. Apparently, when he talked further with Brian Flores about tanking, he was just joking around. He's just playing. he's just messing. He's just giving a little hair tussle and said, yeah, you little scamp. Like, it's fine. We're not really trying to lose games. I didn't really understand it, but sure, they were not punished for that, and they were cleared on that. Even still, you had an owner who fired Brian Flores and who people were not pleased with, and then was accused of being openly tanking, which I kind of thought was funny because what owner – there's obviously other owners that have done this before, and I don't know how you couldn't. I'm a Seattle Seahawks fan. You know what I'm hoping for this year? Tanking. Mm-hmm. I didn't want them to go out and get Baker Mayfield. I wanted them to tank. You could have one bad tank year. That's the point. You go out, get a quarterback of the future. It was worth it, right? Who among us wasn't rooting for the Raptors tank during the Miami season, right? The Florida season. Everybody was, except for a select few of sycophants. But there's mostly all of us can kind of put the logic together. Either way, it was a tough look for him, right? Brian Flores took to the media. He was a sympathetic figure, one of the only black coaches in the NFL, somebody who, you know, seemingly was going to be blackballed now. And people didn't like Ross. Now he's going after Tom Brady, and it's viewed as cheating. What I think is interesting about this one is how you feel about it if you're a Patriots fan. Because he did it twice. He was doing it with the Buccaneers, but he did it all the way back in 2019 when he was still a Patriot. That sticks out. Because the Buccaneers, Tom Brady, is a mercenary, okay? He's not a Buccaneer. Sorry, Derek, right? But the Bucs shouldn't mean much to Tom Brady. They were just a place in the sun where he could load up a football team the way he wanted to. The Dolphins, the fact that he was already talking about executive roles and potentially playing for the team, and that all that smoke around him and the Dolphins, and that this past retirement was potentially a play to get there, the idea that that played all the way back to 2019 while he's a Patriot. You're a Patriots fan, Ailish. Like, how does this make you feel?
Shut up about that. I'm not a Patriots fan.
You love the Patriots.
I do wonder, like, the conversation, nobody was really discussing how it affects Tom Brady's legacy, but I don't know. Shady, of course. It doesn't affect me as a Patriots fan since I'm not.
Yeah, okay. I think it's a tough look if you're a Patriots fan. I think that Patriots fans have had to do a lot of like bending over backwards to justify Tom Brady's leaving or justify their feelings about Tom Brady's leaving.
Deflategate, everything.
Well, no, that's different. They actually got screwed on Deflategate. Like Tom Brady, the cheater line. Like, did he deflate the footballs? Absolutely. Should that have been the blemish that it was? Should that have been the suspension that it was? Should it have been something that the NFL went, you know, balls to the wall on? No. But I'm talking about his departure and how people feel about it. Where Patriots fans, I think a lot of you thought he was not done, but not the same guy anymore. There was a lot of the deep ball conversation, and whether or not they chose between him and Bill correctly seems to be pretty obvious that they chose the wrong guy, that it was better to keep Tom Brady and put more resources around him because he won a Super Bowl. Bill Belichick has not been able to even come close. But I think Patriots fans have done this whole thing where they've gone, well, we're rooting for Tom still, and they're just Patriots South. He and Gronk. He went on to win a Super Bowl. They went, oh, we're happy for Tom. Then he had his fake retirement where he didn't really address the Patriots, and the Patriots fans went, no, it's because he's doing it later, or he already did it. He's retiring from the Bucks is why he did it this way. He's had a pretty adversarial relationship with the Patriots and New England since he's left.
Well, remember, didn't mention anything in his retirement about...
That's what I'm saying.
Patriots, it's a big slap in the face.
That's what I'm saying, is that Patriots fans have had to really work hard to defend Tom. Tom Brady doesn't owe us anything. He gave us six Super Bowls. Okay, sure, you're the ones screaming this loud, really loud. And now you add this to the list that while he was on the Patriots, Mr. Winner, Mr. All Focus on being a champion, he was making eyes at a different organization. One that was in the division. Just saying. It's a lot of things you got to defend from 2019 on when it comes to Tom Brady and his relationship with the Pats. If you want to blame it all on Bill, fine. Blame it all on Bill and his inflexibility. You want to blame it on Robert Kraft for picking the wrong guy or not giving Tom what he wanted, whatever. But either way, since 2019, Tom Brady, even before that, he probably, which seems like he had a fractured relationship with Belichick and to a certain extent the organization. But as a Patriot, he was thinking about playing in the division for a different team.
It's like when you break up with someone and they've thought you were going to, you had something with someone else, and then you do go date that person and you're like, wow, all along, I knew there's something sketchy going on there between you two.
I knew that. Yes, 100%.
You were liking each other's Instagram posts.
Yeah,
there was something there.
There was something there, but unfortunately, this one could not be consummated. Not for Tom Brady. Couldn't get it done. Let's take a break. Let's come in. Loaded Hour, Weigh In Wednesday. We want to hear from you. Again, you can reach us on Twitter or on Instagram at any time, at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar. Shoot a follow, shoot a line, or text 590-590. And let us know what you thought about the Jays deadline. If you want to talk about something else, you can, but I think it's going to be deadline day today, to be honest. Just how the fan base is feeling. If you need to vent, great. If you want to defend the front office, great. You want to tell us about how much you love the prospects, great. You want to tell us how much you hated the prices, great. You want to tell us that this front office is on the hot seat, awesome. You want to do whatever you want. Just that's going to be at 7:35 today. But first, it's my buddy from Fan Drive Time. I'm going to give him an opportunity to speak because I basically just cut him off for half an hour
we'll
on his show yesterday. It's the Fan Morning Show. JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Ben Ennis next.